Welcome to Continued Success, another beautiful winter's Friday as we stare with no expression at the silent gray deathscape that once more has enveloped our world. Hi, I'm Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter for more of that, at Justin_Clue. And with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports, famously of Yahoo Sports. You can follow her at Liz Rocher. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin. You're going to talk about baseball now. Okay.
No, please go ahead.
I was just going to say, I wrote about Nick Sirianni recently on Yahoo Sports, having had to definitely just eat a lot of crow after just picking him as the first coach to be fired in my preseason prediction.
I mean, come on, though.
one of my editors is amazing. I mean, I work with a lot of amazing, wonderful people, but my editor for football, Joey, is I feel like he proposed this to me specifically because of this. And then I think he's going to put me on the Eagles game this weekend on Sunday, and I'm going to have to write about that too. Like, it's all punishment for something. Being an Eagles fan.
Somebody was saying today their hopes were not high about this game. And I do think that it's the lead up is going to be a lot more fun than the actual game itself. But that being said, you should be granted everyone should be granted a little leeway. I thought Nick Sirianni was going to be fired. Remember those press conferences?
Oh my God, yes.
We got to plant a plant and then we got to grow out of it. And you're like, what the hell are you talking about, man? Just get that. And it's like, we were all like, oh, it's like Gabe Kapler, who is the manager of the year.
here's the difference between the two of them. Nick Sirianni has never coached, never been a head coach anywhere before. He made that ridiculous analogy metaphor thing. And after that point, the Eagles like lost three times out of the next 10 games. That's it. Like after that point, they became like the best running team in football. Like that's the difference. Nick Sirianni saw something wasn't working and changed it. Gabe Kapler just kept doing the same thing over and over and over, hoping that it might work one of these times.
That's a good point. All right, that should make everyone feel better, I think. But yeah, I don't think you need to feel any kind of regret in assuming Sirianni was going to be one of the first ones fired. He really seemed destined for that.
Yeah!
as destined as we kind of are starting to think Joe Girardi might not be brought back after his contract runs out and Dave Dombrowski thinks, perhaps a manager of my choosing would be better in this role. But who knows? We don't know the future. All we know is that this podcast is about baseball, and baseball has not returned, despite the proposals submitted to the Major League Baseball Players Union by Rob Manfred and the league. What was that, like 2 nights ago?
Yeah.
Liz, this proposal was, it just kind of announced to the general base of baseball fans on the 13th of January. It was Major League Baseball's first proposal since the lockout began. Are we still awaiting a counter from the union, the players'
yes.
union at this point?
Yes.
We're all kind of assuming it's going to be a middle finger emoji with Rob Manfred, a crudely drawn Rob Manfred on it, probably getting kicked in the balls by the Philly fanatic.
Yeah. Yeah, like I don't know if this is a point where they'll make a counter proposal or if they'll just be like, no, try again. We don't like any of this. We're not going to make a counter proposal. You have to actually make it better first. I don't know if that's how it works. I mean, that's what I think they should do, but I don't know if that's if it's what they actually, should do in good sense. But yeah, it's all a non-starter. It's terrible. It creates more tears. Everywhere there are more tears separating players.
Every
sense of the word. They're continuing to try and like stratify and pay people differently based on arbitrary measures. Like, no, that's not how any of this works. The teams have to create the value. That's how this works. They have to create the value for these players. They can't just create something and be like, well, this is what we say it is. Like, no, that's like, this is the complete and total opposite. Everything of what they wanted, like none of this, like pretty much none of it is acceptable, which is hilarious.
That was the general impression we all kind of adopted, was that this was nothing that the league should have expected and most likely did not expect. the players union to go like, oh yeah, okay, well, we worked that out. I saw someone break it down to, this is going to drag on forever and ever and ever, and then it's going to be, you know, either a night during what was supposed to be spring training, or maybe the night before when the regular season was supposed to start, and suddenly, what do you know, everybody gets in the same room and works through the night, and after, you know, 18 hours of drinking stale conference room water, somehow they put together a proposal that everybody likes, and what do you know? Suddenly our differences weren't so. It turns out the real lockout was the friends,
friends
we made along the way.
Along the way, maybe?
Well, right? In this proposal that Major League Baseball submitted, you know, some of the usual stuff still existed in it. They want to make some changes to the draft lottery. They're pushing for a 14-team playoff field as opposed to the 12-team playoff field that the players union has supported. Various things like this. But one of the main ones is, of course, still the competitive balance threshold, which, correct me if I'm wrong, that's just a synonym for luxury tax.
Yeah.
Am I right? Okay. So Major League Baseball proposed that the luxury tax, which is at $210 million, actually increase to $214
million. Oh, and wow.
And they want to add penalties for teams that go past it. I believe last I saw, the union wanted to lower the luxury tax to $180 million.
Yeah, it's
so I don't think that's gonna. I don't know. I don't know if the 214 is gonna cut it there.
Yeah. No. Not even a little bit. And I just love, like, their main proposal is we want to lower to $180 million.
I mean,
you start where you perfectly want to be, you know, in the most perfect world ever. And then you move away from that to what's realistic. And I mean, they're way far away from that. They're way far, like tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars away from what's actually reasonable here. So, this is all very chilly. And from what I read, the players are ready to go the long haul. They're ready to, they're feeling insulted. They're feeling insulted by this. And so, you know, they'll hold out as long as they need to.
Here's Jeff Passan from ESPN talking about one of the central issues of negotiations to this point. The league's attempt Thursday to address service time manipulation came via rewarding teams that promote top prospects who find success, according to sources. MLB proposed awarding a draft pick if a team places a top 100 prospect on its opening day roster. Then the player wins Rookie of the Year or finishes in the top three of MVP or Cy Young voting within his first three seasons. The offer included the possibility of a pick in an international draft.
No!
Indicating that the league is continuing to push for a change in the signing of non-domestic amateurs.
No!
A team could reap only one pick per player, meaning if he won Rookie of the Year and then MVP, the second award would not lead to another pick. Players' skepticism toward the idea mirrored that of when the league proposed the wins above replacement metric from FanGraphs to replace the arbitration
system. What the fuck? Just... They've got fucking like 25-year-old, you know, 26-year-old recently graduated people from law school. It feels like that's what they're doing.
So like, it's Manfred's like nephew and his
ridiculous
frat buddies.
This all feels like, some of it feels like, you know, we're, you know, look at us, we're cool, we're using fan graphs. You know, we want.
No one has ever said that.
No.
And I've written for fan graphs.
But what I'm saying is that they're run by people who think that that's going to shut some people up, which it's not. It's not like they were. It feels like some of this is also designed to get the public on their side. And it's no.
It's until we see like another letter from the commissioner or whatever the fuck. I really hope they hold off on any blatant attempt to turn public opinion in their favor, because it's just not gonna go. I think your best chance, like their biggest supporters are the people who are like, they're all greedy, blah, blah, because, you know, it's easier to just hate everyone involved instead of learning anything about what's going on. So I think those are there. That's the league support, the people who just also think the players suck in this case. So, yeah, I mean, what is the thing I just read? Like, that was a lot. What do they say? They proposed awarding a draft pick if a team has a top 100 prospect on opening day, and then that prospect is the rookie of the year. What is, or finishes in the top 3 MVP or Cy Young voting within their first 3 seasons. So, this is to address service time, correct?
I mean, it's supposed to address surface time manipulation. To encourage teams to bring them up as soon as possible. But that's not what that does. That does not do that.
That's my confusion.
I mean, it's opening day roster, but oh no, we have to keep him down an extra full season. Like, what are they doing? They're abandoned. Who cares? They're going to get another draft pick. Where?
Like, and the base. Yeah, the baseball draft is, I don't know. I mean, is a draft pick going to be enough for a team to not continue to manipulate service time?
Like, no.
I don't think that's a deterrent for them. If they don't care enough about their players that they'll keep them down for longer control for the financial benefits and not like, oh, let's get Vlad Jr. up here as soon as possible. That one was hilarious when they were keeping Vlad Guerrero Jr. in the minor leagues in a clear example of service time manipulation. Uh-huh. And they're like, well, he needs to work on his base running. And then like 2 days later, they brought him up and everyone's like, oh, yeah, his base running's all fixed. It's better now. Oh, he's so fast. Ah.
Like, here's the thing they don't get. One of, like, the former Cubs union rep, Chris Bryant, had this happen to him in a public way, an incredibly public way, and everyone knows exactly what it was. I have no idea if he has a lot of pull or not, but he was a former union rep, and he is one of the biggest free agents on the market this season. And he's going to carry some sway. Every player remembers this. Every player right now in Major League Baseball remembers this happening because it was blatantly unfair. He could have been a free agent last year and made a boatload of money. And here's the thing. Who knows how long this is going to last?
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's not signed. And it's just, it's all hanging out there. And it's unfair to him. He should not have to be here. He should have been there last year. Someone else should be in his place.
I mean, like you said, he could have made a boatload of money. That's not what the league want. That's not what the owners want. They don't want players to be, oh, we see an opportunity to pay someone less. That's what this is about. Yay, we can manipulate a service time. Hooray!
Yeah. I mean, it's not just, I mean, they want to pay the big players less, but they'll pay what it takes to sign them. They absolutely will. We've seen that. What they want to do is pay everyone else less. They're looking for ways to pay everyone else less money and to make it cheaper for them to have a strong young team that will win for them, bring in money for them, maybe win championships. And then when it's time for them to go to free agency, they don't have to pay for them if they don't want to. Then there's someone else's problem.
Well, speaking of service time manipulation, in that it involves prospects and keeping people in the minors, a good segue, Liz, is one you have to explain, I feel. Speaking of which, Philly's top prospect list was released by Baseball Prospectus, a trusted source on these matters. And I know, you know, you and I are aware of the top prospects in the Philly system. I don't think there hasn't been a whole lot of movement near the top, I think, in like the top, let's say, five.
Hasn't been exactly competitive up there.
Right. And it's a lot of Mick Abel talk. He's kind of the unanimous number one, I think, across any outlet that you've seen rank Philly's prospects.
Yeah.
It's just not an illustrious group. And I don't mean that to talk down on them. I just mean there's good players here.
There aren't a lot of them.
Yeah. There aren't so many that you can have a debate over who is at the top. Typically, you're going to see Abel. Bryson Stott's up there either at 2 or 3, and Andrew Painter, same thing. And Baseball Prospectus ranked the top 10. And so, but given that there are people who have followed, like beat writers and analysts who have followed these guys much longer than Liz and I have. But what I appreciate about the Baseball Prospectus ranking is that it breaks them down to what I'm sure is a flawed in some way, but for this exercise, we're going to use it, an overall future potential stat, which isn't, you know, it's not necessarily a number. It just kind of gives them a label of what you could expect should they hit their ceiling, essentially. So instead of saying, where do you think Mick Abel fits into this organization moving forward, Liz, we can talk about how the Phillies' top prospect is, according to this overall future potential statistic, considered a number three starter. And beneath him is Andrew Painter, who is a number three or four starter. And beneath him is Bryson Stott, who's an above average infielder. So I guess what I'm saying is, using these labels, which again, you know, we're not saying these are anything
certain.
They're
not exact, yeah.
But using these labels for this exercise, I want to read down this this list of, let's just say, the top five guys. Let's start there. And we can talk about how important it is that someone who has the potential to reach that reaches that for the Phillies in the next couple of years. So let's just start with Mick Abel. How badly do you think the Phillies need a number three starter right now?
I don't know. I feel like feel like they have at least one, if not two, right now.
Let me phrase that a different way. Did Aaron Nola's 2021 season intensify the Phillies' need for starting pitching help now?
Yes.
Okay. So you're not thinking 2022... you can still say Phillies have a rotation and Aaron Nola is like a big part of that. Because I know by the end of last year, let's just say late in last year, I think we all kind of considered it one nice thing about the team was that with Ranger Suarez pitching so well, you kind of knew what the rotation was going to be in 2022 in Wheeler, Nola, Eflin, Suarez, Kyle Gibson. Good Lord. I completely forgot about Kyle Gibson.
I literally wouldn't have been able to name him. We would have stayed here for the rest of our lives.
I wasn't even prepared to say his name. I thought I had all five of them ready to go. And then I got to four. It was like, oh my God. But Eflin, he's going to be recovering, I believe. So they'll be without him to start the 2022 season. So, and in general, you're definitely going to need more than five starters. And if one of those guys can come up from your farm system, so you don't have to focus so much on getting a guy in free agency, even though I assume the Phillies, you know, wouldn't be crazy if they just grabbed some lottery ticket or number five starter off the free agent market. I guess what I'm saying is, having a number three starter, somebody who could be a number three starter, get as high as a number three starter, somebody who's got really decent command, or somebody who's got really decent pitch mix like Mick Abel does, and somebody who is still working to get the command, you know, get control of his command. But that's, you know, he's somebody who could fill that role. So I don't think starting pitching is a huge priority right now. I mean, perhaps that is because their top prospect is a pitcher, but I think you and I talk more about prospects when we're talking about trading people. And I think every time we've brought up Mick Abel, it's been because we were saying we were willing to trade him for a Brian Reynolds or a Cedric Mullins because we don't know him that well, mm-hmm. because we haven't been following him much. But that being said, I mean, you know, on the one hand, in a situation where you're trading Mick Abel, I would only hope it would be for a Brian Reynolds, like somebody who's going to be here, play a key role, does everything well, and is going to be with the Phillies for a long time, you know, will be their center fielder of the future. To me, that entire term is more valuable than Mick Abel, great pitcher. Hope his command improves. We'll see, you know, that kind of stuff. So
you trade something that you don't know if you're going to have for something you need immediately. That's how it works in Major League Baseball, you know, and that's how it is for most of the time. Like, you can trade major leaguers, but the Phillies are not in a position where they have a lot of major leaguers to spare. to trade. Right. Like, there's maybe one or two and no one really wants them. So you can't really trade them. So you have to look into the minors. So everyone just has to deal with that. We don't know what's going to happen. We might, if they trade him, we might see him do better, do incredibly well for another team. One thing we all have to remember, there is no guarantee that would have happened with the Phillies, especially at the state they're in now and might be for the next year or so as they get their shit figured out.
He was, he's also 19.
Yeah.
Or I guess he's 20 now, but he was 19 when he was pitching for the Clearwater in Clearwater mm-hmm. in 2021. So you won't even see Mick Abel for a while, I would say. Did you know Mick Abel was born less than a month before 9/11?
Oh my
God.
How
does that make you feel? Yeah. That's
felt the breath of death come right through me.
You
right
feel
through
cold
my body.
Air, cold air on your neck just now? Like, oh.
My mortality.
Andrew Painter, the next one. Yeah, kind of that's we don't have to address this too much because, you know, his major league ETA kind of is slightly behind Abel's in that they have Abel at showing up in like late 2024. Painter,
that's
2025.
So far away.
Yeah, Painter 2025. So again, I don't know if I'm just cynical and living through the last few years has made me be like, you gotta just live for now. You gotta live for today. So maybe that's where my prospect approach comes from. That I'm like, you know, 2024 is so far off, and you know, who the hell knows what color the sky will be by then. So let's just get a center fielder while we potentially could. Bryson Stott is, I think, much more of a conversation topic right now, given that his major league ETA is 2022, which is now. And Baseball Prospectus labels him an above average infielder should he meet, you know, his projections. This is probably, I guess, no surprise. This has to be one of the, if not the most key guy on this list. In the now, as people who focus on the now, like you and I do, and don't think about when, you know, in 3 years, this guy will get to pitch for us. No, this matters the most, given the Phillies' situation at shortstop, given that, hey, maybe Gene Segura gets traded somewhere. Like, you don't know. Like, there's a potential that happens as well. So the Phillies need infielders, and they need better infielders than Didi Gregorius.
God, yes.
That's, you know, this is an opportunity for Bryson Stott. I don't think that's a secret. So I feel like this is most likely the most critical guy on this list right now.
And Bryce Harper is 100% all about Bryson Stott.
Oh, that's right. And Bryson Stott's 100% all about Bryce Harper. If he kept calling him his roommate.
Oh, they're from Las Vegas. He's from Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That's right. They're from the same place. Alrighty. Mm-hmm.
And they're both going to work together to get Chris Bryant to come here, because I believe isn't Chris Bryant and Bryce Harper their buddies as well?
I think they must be.
Them to Bryson Stott.
They both came up in baseball in Las Vegas,
and they can all hang out together. You know, they can lay in the puke stained hammocks at Spruce Street Harbor Park and watch the sun go down, and then they can look at each other and be like, "Oh, shouldn't we be at the game?" And then it's like a comical race to the subway, and they have to get down to the game. I think that would be entertaining. All right, so Griff McGarry. That's right.
I mean, I can't prove you wrong.
There's a guy named Griff McGarry. Sure. And he's not solving mysteries in a series of young adult children's novels. He
wasn't the character cut out of Animal House.
He's expected to show up in late 2023 as a number three, number four starter or late inning reliever. This is an example of the kind of guy I feel like Bryce Harper was talking about when he was like, yeah, you know, you need a farm system that's at least capable to churn out, you know, fresh arms who can get outs when you need them late in the season. Like, guys you can reach for and they're there and you can rely on them somewhat. You know, obviously, you know, the Phillies have had no shortage of pitchers, but most of their names are in this jar to my right here because they sucked.
No good
and
reasons.
Weren't. You know, they were just kind of around in the Phillies. But no, what Harper was talking about was what we've been talking about for years. Depth doesn't just mean somebody's standing behind you. It means that person can also do a good job. And that's kind of what I'm looking at with Griff McGarry, because if he's somebody who can spot start, somebody who, you know, who doesn't have to blow you away as a frontline starter, but is like a back of the rotation guy and also as a late inning reliever. And again, this is all theoretical at this point, but if he were to become a guy like that, that's exactly the kind of guy the Phillies need if they do indeed go on playoff runs late in the regular season.
Yeah, exactly. That would be a pleasure. That's the thing, for someone to come up from the minors and do it be as advertised largely. I mean, I welcome that. They don't even have to be like super amazing. they just have to be what we thought they were supposed to be, because that's what the Phillies obviously would need them to be at that moment.
Yeah.
That the Phillies have just not had that. They've signed dudes, and they've all of a sudden just started sucking. The Phillies might have ended Brandon Workman's career.
Hey, the Phillies did not do that. Brandon Workman ended his own career. They did end Jeremy Guthrie's career.
That is true.
That we will take credit for. But yeah.
Gladly. My God, on his birthday.
And the last guy, Johan Rojas. See, now I'm sitting here talking about how the Phillies need a center fielder of the future. If you can wait till 2024, you've got what BP calls a potentially above average center fielder coming up in the Philly system. Now, don't ask them about his hip tool, which apparently has famously broken the Baseball Prospectus senior prospect staff on occasion.
Really?
They cannot come to an agreement. They actually say in this profile that Craig Goldstein, the editor, had to lock the thread because there were over 12,000 comments.
Wow.
Which is insane.
How long has it been since the Phillies have had a prospect that people cared enough about to get into a fight?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because people obviously want his hit tool to be good because he's projected to be above average at his fielding position. It would be a blessing if he could also hit.
They say that he is a 4.5 tool player. I think that's where they landed in that's the compromise they landed on, as far as, you know, when they say, oh, he's a 5-tool guy, like how Brian Reynolds is a 5-tool player. He does everything well. Where they landed was Rojas is 4.5. I think what they kind of use as a critique is that he's a little too aggressive on occasion at the plate. His swing can get like wobbly and offline and start chopping off-speed stuff straight into the ground. So pitches that move are still a problem. But again, this guy played in rookie league in 2021. He played in Clearwater in 2021. This is still a guy who's a little ways off, like I said, 2024. But it is still exciting to think, oh, okay, there's a guy here that has created so much conversation and plays a particular position of need. I don't know. I mean, if you're the Phillies and you look down there and let's just say when you look, you see something you really like in Johan Rojas, the way that a lot of people have, since he's ranked 5th here by Baseball Prospectus and apparently has been the subject of intense conversation over there. You look down and see, okay, we got this guy who could, you know, if things work the way they're supposed to, be a center fielder of the future. Does that stall out the likelihood of them making some kind of big trade with a bunch of prospects to get their center fielder of the future?
It really shouldn't. Do they want to win right now? Is now the time?
But is right now 2022, or is right now like the Dave Dombrowski era, you know, within the next 5 years?
I mean, I guess that's a question only the Phillies can answer, but my assumption is they want to start winning as soon as humanly possible.
Yeah, why do we keep thinking that, though?
I don't know why, because it's what they should want to do. Maybe that's not right, but what, I mean, another year is going to, what? Like, if you sign a dude for a couple of years and he's great, he'll have, you know, if this guy is what everyone says he is, then you can take the dude who's blocking him and trade him.
Yeah. Just curious.
Like, don't trade this guy if you think he's going to be something, but that also shouldn't stop you from trying to get a center fielder, because remember, you can trade this guy to a team who wants him.
So that's the top 5 prospects, and we'll take a quick break here in a second, but how many of the Phillies' top 5 prospects, let's just say, because it's not a universal list, let's just say from this list, how many of them would you be willing to see go to fill the Phillies' current needs? Like, it'd be insane for them to do like a 5-for-1 deal with all 5
prospects. No.
But you know what I mean? Like, you know, they make one deal that has one of them in it, maybe make another deal that has another one in it. But like, are there that many guys out there that you're willing to trade top prospects for? I mean, where does your lack of prospect hugging, where does your willingness to trade prospects for talent now end?
I mean, it depends on the prospect. It depends on the player available. But I wouldn't want them to trade 2 players in the top 5, at least not for one player. Not for one guy. That wouldn't be good. But you know, you trade guys further down. I don't know if, I mean, I'm trying to think what the Phillies could get and why they would want it.
Well, let's just let's
I mean,
just say
you could
that.
Conceivably do that almost anywhere on the diamond, but...
Just for the sake of the argument, let's say the Phillies came to you for some reason. The phone rang in the middle of the night, you answered, and Dave Dombrowski's quiet voice, he's huddled in the corner of his office, it's dark, and he's just like, Liz, we can get a left fielder who's going to help us win, and we can get a center fielder who can help us win, but we have to give up in you know, separate trades, and that also involve other players. But to do so, we need to give up four of our top five prospects.
I don't know.
Clock's ticking, Liz. This is all on you.
So it's four prospects for...
Four prospects and, like, other stuff for... In two separate trades. Let's say a bunch of trades... That the Phillies are also going to get some bullpen help, like, you know, factor in all this. It's a big trade, but the core of it is we're going to lose four prospects collectively in all these trades, but we're going to gain an answer in left field, a longer term answer in center field, and bullpen help.
No, I don't do that. Not no, because you're defeating the purpose of what Dave Dombrowski is also here to do, which is turn the farm system into something great. And because you have to trade so many of those guys to get so much back, like the Phillies do have money that they could spend instead of emptying out their top prospects piggy bank, you know?
Is Dave Dombrowski here to fix the farm system?
He's here to fix what's broken, was my understanding.
Okay.
And I believe from what we've read, that part is broken.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not denying that it's broken.
No, and like, I believe he has said, like, that's part of what he's here to do, is to fix that, because it was very, I mean, otherwise he wouldn't have made so many changes recently. He made a ton of changes.
That's true. The Phillies have undergone a lot of change behind the scenes. While most of the seasonal narrative has been dominated by lockout talk, the moves that the Phillies have made have not been loud, but there have been a lot of them, and they stand to have quite an impact on the organization.
Yes, they do. And so, like, that's part of what, you know, of fixing the on-field product is about. Like, the Phillies need a stronger farm system, whether Dombrowski is here to do that or not. The Phillies need one. And getting rid of your four top prospects is not how you do it. You could get rid of one, maybe two, but if you get rid of four of them, there's just such a gap. It's all bad.
Remember that's a hypothetical posed by me.
I know, it's a hypothetical posed by you, but I'm obviously very, very disturbed by it. I don't like it. I think you should take it back.
I'm glad I asked, because I didn't know where your kick prospects out the door attitude ended.
We can't get rid of it.
I feel like it ends
them.
Before that. What if it was three of them? Do you make those deals?
I feel like they can get rid of two. Those are the ones I'm willing to part with. There are guys that I am intrigued by, guys that we need, you know, but I'd be willing to get rid of two, maybe. Yeah.
This was good. This was healthy. Now we know what the exact parameters are.
What about
you? Talk about.
Why am I the only one answering this question? Answer the question.
Well, it's because I'm in charge of the recording button. How many? I don't know, man. I am very satisfied by instant gratification.
I know
these
you
days.
Are.
It's scary. What I feel like I'd be a prospectless terrorist with a question like this. Just so I have a different answer from you. I'm going to say I'd be willing to go as high as three for answers now. Because in my mind, this system is, like we're saying, it's fucked. It's going to be fixed, hopefully, but we don't know if it's going to be fixed. I wouldn't even say Dave Dombrowski's specialty is fixing farm systems.
Oh, it's definitely not. But
so I would say that, you know, it's not getting better now. And while these guys are exciting... and it is exciting to go around and read these lists right now. If you're someone who's not super familiar with the Phillies' top prospects, they do have some cool sounding guys. It's just there's still a couple, for the most part, still a couple years away. I think I can go as high as three of them, considering that, like, we're in general addressing every one of the Phillies' current needs almost with an actual answer, not just, well, we think this guy can work and here's how we're going to convince you. In this case, it's no, nobody needs any convincing. These are going to be viewed as answers. So yeah, I'd be willing to go as high as three. And I know it would be tough for people, and it would be an emotional time, I'm sure, because that's a lot. I know that is a lot for some people. Three top five prospects. I mean, you're almost certainly overpaying, but I don't know. I'm kind of just ready to see the Major League Baseball team, the Phillies, start playing really good baseball again. And if that's what it takes right now, I'm willing to do that. But, you know, I'm not going to lie. My heart hurt a bit when Sixto Sanchez went, and when it seemed like he was really on track. And I mean, you know, he can certainly still have an awesome career. But, you know, that was
Phillies have won that trade for now.
But we can confidently say that going from like 28th in the league at the catching position to number one helped this team have the success it did have thus far.
And that's something I need. I mean, that's why I'm willing to trade two guys in two different deals, because I think two more players like that, depending on where you put them, you know, where they're supposed to be, is a huge thing. Like, that's a lot. And the rest the Phillies could make up by spending some of that money they got.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about a little bit about, you know, what if the Phillies just kind of left Philadelphia? Yeah, we're going to talk about that. And then we're also going to do what we always do on Continued Success, which is crack open the mason jar and talk about two Phillies from the rebuild era that you have maybe forgotten or at least don't think about every day anymore. And just kind of try to give you some information maybe you don't know about two guys you don't hear about anymore from that time. And then we'll pick two new names to talk about next time. So we'll be right back after this break. And welcome back to Continued Success. Liz, that's enough fun expert prospect talk from the two of us as we discuss Baseball Prospectus's top 10 Phillies prospect list. But now on to even more crucial topics, which is things that happened in the distant past, because yesterday was the anniversary of the time that State Senator Joe Calgill produced a bill to build an $8 million stadium in Delaware Township, dependent on the nearby Phillies' decision to move to southern New Jersey, something they were considering at the time. Bob Carpenter, the Phillies owner at that time in 1959, he was not concerned about whether or not fans would follow the team to New Jersey. He said, "I know you can get there from City Hall in 12 minutes, where the spot they were looking, near the Garden State Park racetrack." Carpenter called it ideal. He said he could get there in 12 minutes. He said, "I drove it myself, and that's faster than I can get from City Hall to Connie Mack Stadium, where they were currently playing." And the stadium the Phillies were trying to, you know, replace, get replaced by the city at this point, and this was the point of contention, why they were threatening to move to New Jersey. He said he didn't think fans would mind crossing the river. He said he can't help but be interested in the offer. But were they to move, and this was one of my questions I was going to ask you, but we don't have to now, they would still be known as the Philadelphia Phillies. So they would be doing a New York Giants, New York Jets kind of situation where the stadium's in Jersey, but we're just going to ignore that part. My first question for you is, why don't people want to be known as the team from New Jersey?
That's a great question.
Why did that have to be stressed by Bob Carpenter at this point? And why are there two football teams who play there and don't want to represent the state of New Jersey? They used to have the Nets, but then even they abandoned them for actual New York in Brooklyn. So, why doesn't anyone want to be known? I'd say a lot of Phillies fans are from South Jersey. Why wouldn't the Phillies at that time consider changing to the New Jersey Phillies?
But why? Why? I mean,
you're asking why am I wondering this?
Well, no, but like to go from it's New Jersey doesn't have like a signature city. It's even the way it looks, it's like this weird blob between a bunch of like that a bunch of other states are pressing out into the ocean, really. I feel as if it's, you know, everyone from New Jersey wants to be from somewhere else. Not everyone, but like that's you think about it, like there's a part of Jersey that likes to pretend it's part of New York and it's not. Sort of like how there's part of Connecticut that wants to pretend like it's from New York, but it's not. There's a reason Connecticut doesn't have any, like, major sports teams either.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess the thing, the problem you run into when you've named your team after...
But they have,
you know,
the Sun. I don't want to forget. They do have a WNBA team, which Philadelphia doesn't have. They have the Sun.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But the trouble you run into when you have named your team after, like, you know, a person from the city you play in,
yeah,
you can't even really change the name to New Jersey Phillies. I'm just saying, it's easy to imagine reading one of these old articles that says, you know, the Philadelphia Phillies will be known as the, you know, a different team, the New Jersey Wheelbarrows. First thing that came to mind.
It's hard.
Don't know why.
The New Jersey Parkways.
But, you know, the Philadelphia Phillies kind of has an old timey ring to it anyway.
True. Exactly. That is true.
Yeah. So where are we in the future? This obviously did not happen, and they knew it wasn't going to happen by April of that year. So 4 months later, Bob Kelly wrote a column in the Delaware, in the Wilmington Morning News of Delaware, where he said the Phillies are going to stay put indefinitely. There'll be no portage to South Jersey, and to riddle the ripest rumor, neither will there be a move to New York City's dehydrated Flushing Meadows. Because that's right, Liz, there was a idea out there from I guess New York Mayor Robert Wagner at the time, and Bill Shea, a member of Wagner's Bring Another Baseball Team to New York team, they tried to talk Bob Carpenter into taking the Phillies to lovely Flushing, New York, and becoming the team that plays there. The past is a fucked up place.
Yeah.
Is, I guess, what I'm getting at here. So what I can't really ask what would you feel like if the Phillies, let's imagine you're someone in 1959, the Phillies leave Philadelphia and become the Mets. Your thoughts?
I don't know. I don't like to think about myself as a Mets fan. I know I say that, like, the Phillies and Mets are similar, but
our lives would be totally different.
Oh,
like, you know,
completely.
I don't know if we'd even care that they were the Mets.
I don't know.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Do the A's still? When did the A's leave?
That's a good question. Did they leave in the 40s?
Someone is screaming the answer.
Yeah, sorry, everyone listening. Who knows who's smarter than us?
1954.
Close.
So they had moved 5 years before. Philadelphia, no baseball team. Do they get one back at some point if the Phillies move to Flushing or Jersey?
That's a really good question. I don't know. Maybe depending. I mean, they probably would have ended up getting the franchise that Washington did.
Oh, that's not a bad point. I think it definitely comes back at some point. And they would still be calling themselves the Philadelphia Phillies if they were in Jersey. So,
and I can't, but for a minute, I cannot imagine what the city would be like if there wasn't baseball all this whole time. And then we got a team in like 2008 or 6 or whatever it was. I can't even imagine what we'd be like.
I mean, people, you mentioned the WNBA team. People are pretty thirsty for a WNBA team here, let alone if Major League Baseball, which has been around for so much longer, I think they would have been banging that drum for a couple of decades if they just never brought one here.
People who are, I'm one of the people desperate for a WNBA team in Philadelphia. Give me another Philadelphia team to root for and I am there. I'm there. Doesn't matter what it is. There's just,
yeah,
I think
we'll
they have a new football team and whatever that new football league
USFL.
Is. Yes, they have a team there. Yeah. I will probably watch a game.
I was going to say, they will be very popular for a year. I think we can bet on that.
Maybe not even that. I don't know.
A Philadelphia team that hasn't hurt us. That's unheard of.
Oh, God.
All right, anyway, I just felt like I had to bring that up because, like, you know, you forget that the Phillies ever considered moving anywhere because at this point, it's just, you know, it seems ludicrous. but let's jump into the Mason jar. You had to look up Tommy Hunter and bring us new information on him. I had to look up Jose Perella and find some info on him. Liz, would you like to go first?
Yes. Here's some interesting and new information about Tommy Hunter you did not know. He was born July 3rd, 1986. His full name is Raymond Thomas Hunter III.
Lot going on there.
Yeah, there's a lot.
They were all born right around America's birthday, and they all come out with a little star-spangled top hat on.
I would like to imagine that. He is a two-time junior Olympic champion in judo.
Huh. You know, right? What? That doesn't surprise me, but I did not know that.
Yes. It does make the weird bullpen dance he did. Do you remember this? Like in August 2020, he did like this weird, leg over kick, like hip thrust warm up dance thing. Like while he was warming up for a game. It's very strange looking here.
And then he allowed a 3-run home run.
Presumably. Yeah. I mean, this is like way before the game. No one's even in the seats, but it's just like now that explains some stuff to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay, see? We're learning about Tommy Hunter, yes. Which is, I think we can agree, the point of the podcast.
Yes. He went to Alabama, unless that is a different... Hold on. Yes, he went to the University of Alabama. I'm like, I a lot of the A emblems... No. Logos. A lot of the A logos look the same to me, so I look at them. I'm not sure what team they're for. I'm like, this is not the Braves, right? This is definitely Alabama. He was a 3-year starter at Cathedral High School, the Fighting Irish. He's from Indianapolis. He was born in Indianapolis, and that is where he went to school. And then he just went to Alabama, I guess, from there.
Indianapolis, the Alabama of the middle.
Actually, that's totally and completely 100% true.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
As someone who is, yeah, I'll say that much. I've never been to Indianapolis, but I've been to enough of Indiana that I feel very safe in saying that. you can really circle in like the way hinterland, like the northwest part of Ohio is sort of in the same boat. They're like the Alabama outcropping.
And he was like, you know what? I need to, you know what sounds appealing? The South.
Yeah, apparently. He was named to the Indianapolis Star Tribune North Player of the Year. They're North, the thing's probably from North Indianapolis. Whatever. But yes, congratulations to him for that. He went to the 2005 City Sectional and Regional Championships.
Yeah, let's tweet at him. Hey, man. Hey. I know you don't even play for the Phillies anymore, but hey, congrats on that Indiana Star Tribune Player of the Year award. That's super impressive. Like, we were just leafing through some old newspapers before we burned them. And and we saw a little tidbit about you. Hey, congrats. Congrats. Is he still pitching in Major League Baseball?
Super great question. He's pitched for a lot of teams. Right now, because I'm going to ask you how many teams you think he's pitched for. He pitched in 2021. A innings. Let's take a look at the minors. Where is he?
Did he go to the Rays? I feel like he went to the Rays. That feels like something they'd do.
No. Oh, he was with the Mets.
Oh.
This is the 2021. He was with the Mets in 21. And he did not go. I think he might have just been released. He did not go to the minors with the Mets.
Again, congrats.
Yes.
You did not get flushed down the Mets toilet. In your what is he, like 34, 35?
He is
going to turn out to be 26.
35.
Aha!
1986, yes.
Yeah. It's a good time to go to the Rays. Oh, wait, no, he didn't go to the Rays. The Phillies got him after the Rays, which, you know, again, they really did. They did that with Hunter. They did that with Alvarado.
No, he did go to the Rays at one point. He did go to the Rays at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Where is he? Where did he go to the Rays? Phillies. Right before, yeah, he went right before. Do you obviously have looked him up. Do you know how many teams he played for?
Oh no, I'm gonna guess 12.
Seven.
Ah.
Seven's still a lot. He spent 6 years in Baltimore, 4 years in Texas, and 3 years in Philly. Those are his longest stays, and he was drafted by the Rangers.
My God, he was here 3 years. What are we doing?
I don't know. We decided to do this, so now we have to ask ourselves that question every week.
At least he only pitched like 5 innings in 2019. All right, what else you got?
His ERA in 11 innings in his debut year of 2008. He was drafted in 2004. He made his debut for the Rangers in 2008. In 11 innings, he had a 16.36 ERA. He was a starter at this point. He was a starter for a while. He was a starter right up until 2013, his third year with the Orioles. There is a whole lot of interesting stuff. Though he does have a quote from a 2014, is his Cathedral alum Tommy Hunter settling into Orioles closer role. He has this interesting quote. "Baseball is a failing man's sport, and there's something to learn and take from every day," Hunter said. "You're going to have to forget what happened the day before, whether it was good or bad, because you're going to have to go out and perform the next day."
Yeah, I like the guys that focus on the failure aspect. That just seems healthy to me, as far as baseball approaches go. That doesn't necessarily mean they are healthy, but it does kind of indicate, I don't know, if you're prepared to fail as many times as people fail in baseball, then you're prepared to play baseball, I would say. Because I've heard coaches, instructors, work with kids, talk about the same thing. When you ask, like, what is the specifically, like, that getting kids who want to gravitate towards baseball instead of basketball or football or whatever else, like, why baseball in particular? What does it give kids? And they all say that. And they say it pretty quick, too, that it teaches kids to fail. And it teaches them, you know, how to do that at a young age so that they get used to it if they keep playing baseball. And if they can withstand it, then, you know, those are the kids that come out of, like, Little League loving baseball. Yeah, but then, you know, you get a lot of kids that break off because they just, a lot of the sport is learning what you're doing wrong.
Yeah. Like, that's why I really liked it. Baseball is a failing man's sport. And I feel like if everyone thought about it that way a little bit more, it might be better for baseball in general, you know?
What I remember about him in that infamous season is that he actually didn't have too many bad appearances, but he had like three or four really bad appearances.
Really fucking terrible appearances, my God.
And then, of course, he was the one who got on that Zoom call and was like, "Ah, stop talking about us," and like showed his bicep and was like, "Rawr." And it was just like, "Yeah, but you guys suck though, and this isn't going to change the fact that you guys suck because you guys really suck this year." I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, this was the phase. Yeah, it pisses you off, Hunter said. The criticism the bullpen has received. "I come in every day just like everybody else. We want to win. We want to win the baseball game at the end of the day. There's no Daves we come in that we want to work harder than what we're giving. That's the thing. We're giving everything we have. Sorry it wasn't good enough, but it's not like we're giving more now because we've been getting a little bit of heat. We're the same guys that are showing up the same day and the same mindsets, and the results are just working for us right now. Just aren't working for us right now. That's baseball."
I don't think anybody really was accusing the Phillies bullpen of not giving it their all. That was the problem. We knew we were getting their best stuff.
Yeah.
And they were still the worst bullpen since, what, like 1938 or something like that? Like, yeah, at a certain point, no, man, that's not what you're being accused of. You're being the team is being accused of having acquired guys who can't pitch. Like, that's the problem. You guys are trying.
Yeah.
We know that. You're just not very good.
This is the rest of his quote. "It's, we want to win. Our fan base needs to know. This team wants to win real bad. I have 3 runner-up rings in my closet. I don't like them. I want to win."
So at this point, we were still trying to say, yeah, we're going all the way. We're doing it. Yeah. Because it's not over, it's still going by definition. So here we are. Yeah. Okay. I appreciate the attempt at enthusiasm, but at that point you were kicking a cold body. It felt like, as far as Philly's enthusiasm goes, that was a rough year. They were very, very bad.
They were very bad. Yeah.
All right. Well, let me run through the Jose Perella story here before we close up shop. In 2007, the Yankees acquired shortstop Alberto Gonzalez, who immediately began showing off his defensive value in spring training. He made his second great play in 2 games when he tracked down a windswept foul ball that seemed likely to land in no man's land, but dove into foul territory, made a spectacular catch. Of course, the Yankees pulled him from the game after that, just to be safe, and into his place stepped 17-year-old Jose Perella, who had never played in a professional game before. Perella was, I think, one of the most forgettable guys we're probably going to wind up doing on this show when we're profiling these guys, because he was like a utility infielder, basically, and he never really played a big role in anything except people's complaints about lineups. And that, it turned out that wasn't necessarily fair, but it was super understandable at the time. It was literally Gabe Kapler playing the matchups, but we'll get to that. Perella's journey through the minors continued in 2009. He hit a game-winning single against the Phillies prospects at Lakewood, having faced Trevor May and Jacob Diekman that night. In June 2011, as a member of the Trenton Thunder, Perella was ejected from a game for arguing with an umpire. That was it for him, but for some reason, Trenton's hitting coach, Julius Matos, went absolutely nuclear on these umpires in Perella's defense. He threw a bag of baseballs on the field and then waited in the hallway by the umpire's room to confront them after the game, where he proceeded to get into a screaming match with his own manager. The manager got so mad at Matos for his actions that he had to be restrained, and Matos was sent down to Tampa to speak with Yankees brass about the incident and was obviously suspended. The manager said that Matos had, quote, a couple of issues that he needs to take care of, according to the Scranton newspaper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say so.
That's an understatement right there.
As I've told you, I've just finished reading Billy Martin's autobiography, and there's a story he tells where he's hunting with Mickey Mantle, and then they're being chased by the game warden, and he lags behind. So he tells a story where he's like, and I wasn't going to shoot him, but I pointed my gun at the game warden just so he'd run away, and that worked. And you're just reading this and you're like, this is the story of a crazy person. This is not an okay guy. And he's just been living among us. What is going on here? And that's kind of the vibes I get from a guy who's like, I'm going to throw stuff on the field and I'm going to wait by the umpire's room to confront them.
My goodness.
Anyway, Perella repaid the favor from his manager the next year. The guy's name was... you know what? Actually, before that, this was only a month after the hitting coach going crazy. Perella's name was all over the place, but not because he was at the center of anything. People were going crazy over Derek Jeter rehabbing in Trenton. And when he was subbed out of a game, it was Perella who pinch ran for him. It was actually, I think, Perella's job. He was stealing while he was there, both of them being shortstops at the time. So while the press slobbered over Jeter returning, Perella got some brief exposure, again, because the spotlight was on someone nearby to him. At least it was just a guy playing ball this time and not a guy having a violent meltdown. The next night, Perella, again, the Thunder's shortstop, was moved over to second base to make room for Jeter out there, a move the manager made because he wanted to give Perella a chance to play with Jeter. And then they did a double play together during the game. Isn't that nice?
That's so nice.
And Perella repaid that favor from his manager the next year. The guy's name was Tony Franklin, the same manager who had gotten into it with Matos. Mm-hmm. In 2012, Franklin was on the cusp of his 1,000th career victory as a manager, but the game was tied entering the eighth. For some reason, probably weather, the game was postponed and they had to pick it up again the next day with Franklin's win total still at 999. Well, Perella stepped in the 13th inning of this game that had taken 2 days and crushed a walk-off homer to give Franklin the milestone. And the Thunder won the next game, too, which, of course, started not long after Perella's bomb, since it was a doubleheader. And that one, of course, went 15 innings. So they played, 28 innings that day?
Wow.
Sweet. In the first game of spring training 2013, Perella was part of a Yankees infield that committed 5 errors. And Joe Girardi called him pretty sloppy, which is harsh words from Joe Girardi, I think we can agree. That's some intense language.
Yes.
Perella was the International League Batter of the Week in late May 2014. He debuted in September 2016 for the Yankees. He played in 7 games for the rest of the season, had 8 hits, including a triple in his debut and a double in his last game. That triple in his first game made him the first Yankee to hit one in his debut in 34 years. And even his appearance on the roster was historic, as he was the 57th player the Yankees used that year, a new team record.
Wow.
Yeah, and then Perella and Jeter are linked again in Jeter's final game, the one where he hits the walk-off single at Yankee Stadium, and they're like, well, it's a perfect ending. It was Perella who singled to get on base to start the inning and then moved into scoring position on a sack bunt, and then he was pinch run for, and he didn't wind up scoring on Jeter's hit, but Jose Perella is the one that made that possible. So you're welcome, Derek.
That's great.
Well, Phillies people remember Perella for one day when Gabe Kapler put him in the lineup along with Sean Rodriguez while the team was technically still trying to contend for a playoff spot. This raised a couple eyebrows, you might say, and as Megan Montemuro explained, Gabe was playing the matchup against a lefty. He would likely be subbing in Adam Haseley and Corey Dickerson at some point, but boy, people just did not want to hear about it. They also did not want to hear John Stolness' explanation that Perella had an 808 OPS versus lefties and 313 plate appearances, the highest among the Phillies' backup options at this point. But even so, Perella had 5 plate appearances total this year, John continued. Dickerson has to start. People were staunchly out on Gabe by this point. He used Perella in both corner outfield spots of this in that game, and Perella went 1-for-3 with a walk, and the Phillies lost 5-4 on a 9th-inning Mets walk-off because the bullpen blew it.
God damn it.
Kapler went with Perella again on September 16th, and once again people were like, what are you doing? And Jeff Kerr of CBS Sports asked if Kapler was trying to get fired, but once... But once again, Perella went 1-for-2 with a home run off Dallas Keuchel. And this time, the Phillies beat the Braves 5-4.
I'm sure you can find me complaining about this somewhere in my Twitter archives.
Oh, I should have checked. But me too, absolutely.
Because we both hated it, and then we both were just like, oh, fuck. We went again? God damn it.
Yeah, that's Girardi starting Brad Miller in that one game, and we were all like, this is stupid. And then he hit 3 home runs that night.
God damn, that was... It was one of those moments where, like, this is luck. This is not skill. This is luck because the universe is slapping us around.
I have to tell everyone not to enjoy this. They're gonna love to hear this from me. Well, after the Phillies, Perella went to Japan and then Korea to play ball in their pro leagues after his stateside days were done. For now, at least. But that's the Jose Perella experience, and that was the Tommy Hunter experience. I'm not going to forget to draw 2 new names before we finish up here. Reaching into the Mason jar, named for former Phillies reliever Roger Mason. And around. Take one from the outside this time. Oh, baby. Totally forgot about this guy. We're starting with Mark Leiter Jr.
Oh! That's a good one.
And Mitch Walding.
God, I can't believe you had that tone in your voice.
What? He wasn't going to be the next big thing. He was literally just filling space, and it took him so long to get his first hit. And then finally, some position player grooved him a meatball, and he fucking slammed it into the seats, and John Kruk was so happy for him. It was good. It was nice.
It was. You're right. That is nice.
Yeah. Anyway, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. As always, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Inning with myself and Trevor Strunk. Got a new episode of that up about the 1950 season, which is notable not just because they were the Whiz Kids, but because it was the first season they were no longer known as the Blue Jays, kind of, sort of, not really. But that episode is a lot of fun. And head on over to the Patreon if you need more Phillies content, patreon.com/hittinseason. There's a new Dirty Inning supplement up there right now, so you get extra information that the people on the regular feed just don't get. And then you get to tell everybody about this new Phillies information you have, which that does not sound lame at all. It's extremely cool. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.